The problem with alcoholism in Ireland and European culture as a whole. Right now, I'm doing the Christmas tours and meeting a lot of friends and family. And of course, I'm seeing the problem with alcohol. Alcohol is a slave habit in its pure essence. You might be saying to yourself, all right, Steph, sounds like you're a party pooper. Sounds like you'd be a lot of fun to be around this jolly Christmas. Well, listen, I'm jolly enough as it is. I don't need to be intoxicated by fermented grains, the ultimate slave food, in order for me to have fun, to have a bit of wit, a bit of sharpness about me. I'm blessed with those Irish genetics, so I have the poetic lilt without needing to drown myself in the shadow side of Irish genetics. Alcohol is something that destroys people and destroys culture. And we have a deeply emotional connection to it. People cannot have this shoved in their face. They get furious when I point out to them this thing that maybe alcohol is not doing us any good. It is very difficult to escape alcohol in Irish culture. Look at my studio at the moment. Is it this side? Yeah. Look at this. Even the decorations around me are trying to shove Guinness down my throat. It is a difficult problem. Yes, the Irish collective unconscious is trying to force Guinness down my throat. You look at one of our star icons from the last couple of decades would be Conor McGregor. And what is he? A whiskey salesman. His next business now is going to be selling Forge Irish Stout, the new version of Guinness. We are fundamentally the drinking people. People think of us as the Irish as the drinkers, as the scullers of pints, as the jolly drunks running around the bars. Even the Golden One, he has a new book out called Demigod Mentality, and he actually lived in Ireland for a while, the big Viking Swede. He probably came looking for some books or something like this, and he stayed in the West, in Galway. And he pointed out that he noticed these two spirits within the Irish mentality, almost like the master and slave dichotomy he saw, but it was slightly different. He saw this sort of degenerate, fallen, decrepit, even sort of like grug-like, orc-like energy inside the Irish. And then the more ascendant, poetic, lilting, profound, magical, druid-like Irish. And this is certainly something I've seen in my life as well. This categorization is there. There is something ascendant in us and something descending in us. And confronting the descending, confronting the drunk, confronting the Dionysian, you know, loser inside of us that likes to get hammered and waste our lives is very difficult for people to face up against. Now, I'm starting to get older. I'm starting to become an old wise guy, and I'm starting to see the long-term effects of many of the youthful habits that we had when we were kids. When I was 16 and 17, getting hammered, of course, was a great joy. It was a lot of fun to go all ditzy and doozily from getting smashed. But now, you know, 10 years later, now I'm starting to see the effects of my friends and my relatives and even acquaintances and people I don't know that well who have kept up that habit of always getting hammered and consistently drinking. Now I'm starting to see entropy set in. Now I'm starting to meet, you know, the 28-year-old, the early 30s guy, the guy in his mid-30s that I remember being young, and now he's balding, now he's got like lots of wrinkles, now he's fat, now his face is red because his blood pressure is up. You can see that life hit him like a truck. And almost always behind this is a serious drinking problem that has been enforced in him because this is how the Irish must socialize. And as I've gotten older, I start to see this more and more as something that's absolutely pathetic. It's not a good look when you meet a 30-year-old who's fat and broke, who's been going out twice every single weekend for 10 years, having 12 pints each night on Friday and Saturday, and been hungover essentially since Tuesday. Or the people who drink more regularly than that, who are basically screwed at that point. It's not a good look, and it comes with this feeling of low testosterone, this feeling of escapism, that they have no will to power, they have no agency to crush the problems in their lives. They are not on the offensive against life. They're not in control of their circumstance. They're not able to go after the things that they actually care about instinctively, to get the beautiful girl that they want, to get the wealth that they want, to get property, to get security, to get a direction and purpose in their life. They're essentially nihilists who don't feel that they have the strength to master their situation. And so they find some way of escaping into a feeling, into a depressant, into a substance. These people do not have the will to face themselves and master themselves. They want to escape from themselves. So how can we expect them to become this organized culture and community capable of facing the danger and the threats that are currently pressing upon the Irish nation? And you can extend this type of thinking to Europe as a whole. Ah, yes, it's no secret that the wise elders of Europe have decided to bless the Europeans by transforming them into a multicultural society. And quite a significant part of this is a lot of Arabs and Muslims and Algerians and things like this coming into places like Ireland. People who are very, very different to Ireland, bringing in an entire new, different culture. Now, of course, there's many other people coming in aside from just Algerians or Arabs. But I think this little factoid here, this little trend and phenomenon, provides quite an interesting challenge to both the right, the far right, and the dork left, who would oppose and support this. The threat of Islam would do us Europeans an awful lot of good, because what you would have is the importation of this large swath of men who don't drink, who are hyper-organized, they're clear in their will, they're here to take over, they're here to win, they're here to buy a property, and they're violent when needs be in order to assert their reality and to stand up for their ideology and their perspective. Now, this would inject a large amount of fear and danger into the dozy, drunk, and sloppy Irish who have gotten lazy in the last few decades. Ah, yes, it may not flatter our sophisticated European culture, our self-image of having the righteous, rational tradition of intelligence and enlightenment compared to these, you know, backwards Muslims. But if we had a hyper-masculine religion show up that was getting brotherhoods together and housing estates, buying up all the housing estates and creating generational wealth, threatening the integrity of the nation itself, maybe that would be enough to wake up half the Irish people from their perpetual hangover. As much as you might not like it, the West getting humbled by Islam might not do it any harm. It's like a fighter who's gotten fat, sloppy, and lazy stepping into the ring and getting beaten up, and having to realize that I'm not good enough anymore. I've been resting on my laurels. I'm not serious. I'm not here to win. And therefore, the champion, the younger guy who wants to win, the other dude who's been training hard, the other dude who's remained true to his instincts, he's going to be the one to win. In fact, I need to sit down and I need to study tapes of him and look at what he's doing right in order for me to remain competitive. I need to put my ego aside and realize I'm fucking up because I'm an idiot, because I'm doing something wrong. But of course, arrogant, idiotic Europeans on both the left and right can't take that type of criticism. They can't look to a rival, to a foreigner. That's right, I might be the best left-winger and the best right-winger put together. I'm able to sit down here and look at how Islam is the most hard-right, hierarchical, extreme-based, misogynistic world vision that's ever been conceived in this earth. I'm able to comprehend that and realize and see these virtues inside of it and grip onto them. Or I'm a better lefty, a better liberal than anybody who's ever existed. And I'm able to, you know, humiliate traditional Western culture and ignore all of our long historical struggle against Islam. And I'm able to put all that chauvinism aside and really sit down and appreciate the delicacy and the sophistication of Islam, to understand the other, to put my shadow work in and begin to comprehend the virtues of somebody who's not like me, who in some sense is almost diametrically opposed to me. Yes, I am the ultimate liberal, the ultimate far-right extremist. I'm the unity of them all, the conjunctio opposite, as Carl Jung would say. And there was another man who was quite good at seeing the other sides of many of these European arguments. He was good at, you know, throwing a bit of shade at his own people. And of course, this was Friedrich Nietzsche. He loved to have a bash at the Germans and the Europeans as a whole. And he actually had some very nice things to say about Islam, some very assertive things to say about Islam, designed to shove back in our faces the incompetencies that riddle the Europeans. Nietzsche went on to say that Islam was born out of noble and manly instincts, because it said yes to life, even to the rare and refined luxuriousness of Moorish life. Now think about this, you know, we talk about the reactionary trads, you see an awful lot of them now, they're like, oh, the woke are so terrible, fertility rates are going down, we need to become based again. Oh yeah, so based. Oh yeah, I want to be manly. I want to become a religious, traditional religious man. Yeah, the TikTok has convinced me. Excellent. And then once you start to study something like Islam, you start to realize the difference between a first-rate, misogynistic, manly, badass religion and a second-rate, fifth-rate one. And of course, Islam is designed to entirely favor the male imperative and the male instincts. Christianity is in some sense egalitarian. Now, there might be Platonists among us who say that's a good thing, of course. We want to dignify both man and woman and create this elegant unity of culture. And of course, I can see that argument. Yes. But Islam is biased towards the nobility of man, the nobility of man's creative instincts in the world. Man is the center creative force, and Islam empowers him. Man is allowed to have several wives. Man is allowed to have those several wives and fulfill his fertile imperative of having many different wives as a reward for him becoming powerful enough. If he is not powerful, if he is not competent, ambitious, or able to become that good, he has to stick with his one wife. He's not able to take on any more. It's seen as silly and frowned upon by the community. But if he becomes magnificent, if he becomes a prince, a king, he can take on all four. He can have a litany of different women. Now, how many problems would that solve about with the issues of feminism nowadays when you think about it? If, you know, instead of being bound to some state-organized marriage where you're trapped with some woman and she can take half your stuff and all these, imagine instead if you had the full weight of masculine responsibility placed upon your shoulders, but in return for this you got four women and they couldn't play sexual games with you or something like this. You would have all these options. You would be this ultimate authority inside of the house. God damn, I kind of understand why Andrew Tate went for it, you know, because this religion seems to be a pure expression of male virility, unlike Christianity. As hard as it is for us based trads, religious reactionaries to say, that's the clear naked facts. But of course, Nietzsche was a fucking dork incel who hugged a horse and died like a gay man or something like this. So who cares what he says? Well, he goes on to say more. Nietzsche continues in the same quote to say, "The Crusades made war on something which they instead should have bowed down before and groveled in the dust. There is no more choice between Islam and Christianity than there is between an Arab and a Jew. Either a man is a slave or he is not." In fact, Nietzsche uses the word shandala, or he is not. Again, Nietzsche's shoving in our face quite a difficult challenge right now. He's saying to us that Islam is the expression of a princely, a noble, a male-orientated religion. It is the religion of kings. It is a religion that formalizes the instinctive behavior of kings. Let's get a little bit evolutionarily psychology inside of here. Jordan Peterson come and tell you that evolutionary psychology predicates the Bible and Christianity. But maybe we'll take this a step further. If you think about the behavior of a high status, high quality man in nature, if you realize that at the very apex of society, the top 1% of men, they live a different life than the majority of men. They live a different life than those 99% of men who maybe have to settle for a slightly different standard in reality. Maybe one wife is what they need. But at the very, very tippity top, those men never operate under the same standards as the lower men. The men at the top, the princes, the royals, that particular position and status allows them to express their instincts. It is almost the predicate of reaching that status. When you get to the top, you're allowed to have the harem. You're allowed to have the giant house where you keep all the girls that you pick up when you're on your conquest, or you buy them as slaves or something like that. And you're allowed to breed them all. Alexander the Great conquered the entire known world, and then he took a year off to fuck a different woman every single night. That was his reward for all his hard work conquering the world. This is what men at the apex do. And people might say, well, no, based Christianity doesn't do this. That's not how things worked in based Christian Europe. But that's actually exactly how things worked in based Christian Europe. Go and look up the French kings. Look up all the mistresses they had in the most royal, most Catholic, most right-wing government that has ever existed in this fucking planet. The literal definition of right-wing comes from these guys. Look up how they worked with their mistresses. You'll see certain Louis and certain whatevers. You'll see them have these enormous lists of all these different chicks that they were picking up, and they'd bang them for a year and then they'd toss them out. And they may have a formal political wife in order to, you know, flatter society as a whole, but their behavior was the exact same as any Muslim sheikh or shah or whatever fuck you call those dudes out there. This is how males at the apex of society operate. And Islam is designed to flatter, to formalize those evolutionary instincts. Now, the experience of a man lower status than that, at the bottom of society, is monogamy, is having this one wife, is having this restriction to the small little community, is having this need to be humble, this need to put himself aside, love thy neighbor, and be a part of the community. The man who is not high status, the man who has not become free and is allowed to express his instincts, but instead must suppress them in some sense. His experience aligns with Christianity an awful lot more, and that's a very hard thing to take on the chin. Christianity looks more like an organizational tool for pretty average people. Now, you could argue, of course, that Christianity does lead to more social stability or something like this. I understand all this stuff exactly. Christianity has its own very profound merits. It's much more psychological than Islam. It's much more subtle. It's much more stylish in some sense. I do definitely understand its profoundness, but this is a hard thing to take on the chin, that it is an expression of the beta male's reality, the experience of the beta male. Just give me one GF, give me one girl that I can put on a pedestal and idolize and simp for. Please just give me that one girl. That's actually, in some sense, the predicate towards the problems of feminism and many of those restrictions. Islam seems to overcome all of these. What does this mean? Are we able to think with this type of severity, to look this hard against our own traditions and religions, our own perspective? Most people can't, because most people are simply emotional about this stuff. They can't think and they can't be rational. They can't think and they can't be rational because they can't face reality. And this is Nietzsche's final point about the nobility inherent within Islam. There are two great drugs that we Europeans use to escape the hardness of reality, and these are alcohol and Christianity. Now, what do we mean by this idea of reality? How does it tie into this question? Well, this is something us Nietzsche scholars should know, that Nietzsche discovered all the way back in ancient Greece when he did the genealogy of morals, that he saw that the Greek noble castes, the rulers, the Spartans who conquered the Helots, they always self-identified and conceptualized themselves as the honest, the truthful, and those in possession of reality, those who can face the real world as it is. And juxtaposed with this is that the slaves, the caste of people who were conquered, were only conquered because they did not have the honesty and the sincerity to face the facts of life. Now, you can think about this on the simplest level possible, that when these people showed up as ancient warriors, there were some people who were spending their time coping, weren't realizing that the way the world works is that it's a violent place that requires you to be powerful and strong, and they would not do the necessary work to become disciplined and effective. They would not engage with reality and become powerful, because reality forces you to become strong when you engage with it. That's the masculine imperative's fundamental feeling and understanding, is confront the world and become strong, lift the heavy weight, lift reality up, and you become strong. It's the basic idea. And when you face reality, you wrestle with it, you become strong, it becomes easier for you to overtake reality and conquer those other people. Now, there's a lot of people, and you'll see this, who can't handle the heaviness of reality. They can't handle the weight. They can't handle the gravity. And so they try to cope. They try to escape. And this is the mark of the slave. Maybe some guys living in Greece before the Dorians showed up were running around getting drunk all the time, you know, being farmers, fermenting grains, escaping the reality of how violent and the violent world works and armies work. Instead, they were just, you know, they were just getting lost in the clouds, lost in their own emotions, lost in the kind of sadness and nihilism of life. They are copers and liars, and they got conquered. They were the ones who got put under the foot and held down with a sword pointed at their neck. They were the ones who got enslaved by the Spartans. And they did this because they were liars. They were people who could never be honest with themselves. When these poor people then had to face these Spartans over generations as their overlords, they could never acknowledge that these Spartans were in this position. These ancient Greeks were better than them because they beat them in open battle, in combat, in the war of life, the battlefield of life. They could never acknowledge that because that would hurt their ego. And so instead they would lie. They would tell a lie, a deception about life. They would say that, oh, these Spartans, they're evil. These overcast, these ruling classes, they're nasty. They're demons. There's something wrong with them. They're twisted. They aren't chill and relaxed and fun like us. They can't just, you know, relax and get stoned or go drinking or escape reality or get out of this thing. They can't have some fucking chill, bro. Instead, they're going around conquering things all the time. They're a load of Andrew Tates who are full of, you know, all this negative masculine, toxic masculine energy. Well, this is precisely the dichotomy that Nietzsche points out as the fundamental psychological problem. And I hope you can see these patterns mapping across us Europeans. Because, of course, Islam is built on that realism, built on grabbing onto reality. You can't have alcohol and escape. You must face Allah. You can't have any of these things like this sort of like freedom for your own life or anything like this. You can't escape. You're forced to be constricted by ruthless discipline and confront reality itself and bow to reality all the time. It forces that upon you. And there's something very sincere and very noble about that, and very virile and very powerful about that. Yeah, and I know a lot of people are going to get their knickers in a twist about this, but what is that thing that people say? What's that cliche? It's fucking all over Pinterest. It takes a intelligent mind to be able to entertain two contradictory ideas at the same time and not believe in either of them. And you should be able to do something like this. It's almost like an IQ test. Can you not sit down and realize, yes, Islam often doesn't live up to this ideal either? I wouldn't necessarily say the invasion taking place in Europe right now is anything that we would consider virile and manly. They're getting funneled in by a load of charities, pretending, being like, I'm an asylum seeker. They're you know, acting like these little effeminate girls trying to get sneak in so they can bother old women and take welfare and stuff. It is not exactly very impressive. It's not exactly like Tours. It's not exactly like the guys who conquered Spain or something like this. It's not what it used to be at all. But certainly us Europeans, we're not exactly in our most virile and manly place we've ever been before. We're suffering from serious lack of virility and serious effeminate problems. It seems to be a problem with the world all over. We're all becoming cocked. We're all becoming low test in the way we operate. Nonetheless, these high ideals, these strong things are something we must consider. And what Islam is asserting to us, what Nietzsche points out with the way that Islam operated, is that it is very ruthless against escapism, very ruthless against sentimentality, against romanticism, very ruthless against all types of delusion and nonsense. Instead, it's very realistic, very disciplined, very sober, very stoic, very cruel. Yet if you look at modern European society, we get riddled with all of these negative traits. We're sentimental as hell. All of our justifications for every grand project or our perspectives on the world or our relationship with truth itself is all based on emotions and our feelings. Oh, we should be egalitarian and equalizing and kind because it makes my chest heave when I think about it. You know, I'd like the idea of everybody being fair and us rising women up to the status of ruling corporations and stuff like this. This just feels good. It sounds good. It gets my emotions tingling, and therefore it must be true. This is the opposite of the arid, stoic, cruel and brutal lack of sentimentality that you see in something like Islam. And if you think about all the degeneracy in the West as well, it actually falls into this behavior too. It's escapism. It's pleasure seeking. It's hedonism. It's this type of sloppy, stroppy pursuit of vice. Our inability for us to remain callous, or us to remain serious, us to remain level-headed. These are all very male, manly virtues, and also virtues of a ruling caste, a virtues of a people who govern and are responsible and are high status and who operate, a people who are conscious. Think of the difference between a winner and a loser. Consciousness is almost a part of it. The arid, dry awakeness is almost a part of it. Sleepiness, escaping reality, falling out of reality, falling down into death even. That is something that is the definition of the loser. Think of like two UFC fighters. When one UFC fighter wins, it's because he knocks the other guy out. He steals his consciousness from him. This incredibly terrible thing happens where his intelligence, his skill, his sophistication, his power takes the other guy's consciousness, and then that other guy's body loses free will, loses the ability to govern himself, and he's basically a victim to this conquering man, and that guy goes on to become champion. If this was the natural world, he would scalp that man, cut his head off, and wear it on his chariot. That's the power of consciousness over death, and that man's reality would end right then and there. He would sink into the cold black sentimentality of the other life. And so when I walk through Ireland, I walk through the modern West, I see a people who are in the process of getting transformed into slaves. In some sense, they already are slaves. Everybody is shackled by debt-based usury and finance exploitation by some abstract elite that they don't know exists. They're all paying for these houses and trying to get into the property market, despite the fact that the entire economy is propped up and fake by people who are playing around with the money, which is considered an absolutely atrocious sin in many of these traditional religions. Islam doesn't have that problem. Islam has preserved their taboo around the riba, around usury, in order to prevent something like this. And of course, these native Europeans aren't aware of this. They're not sharp. They're not clear. They don't get that this is going on. They just think it is what it is. Oh yeah, you just pay your mortgage. Oh yeah, your government just prints a load of money. Oh yeah, you just kind of shut up and go along with it. In fact, in order for you to cope with the fact that you can't own a house, you just live a little. You don't be boring. You be a little bit chill, you know? And you just go and you get hammered all the time, and you go and you take drugs all throughout your 20s, and you go to college and you get smashed, and you blast your mind full of psychedelics and stimulants and depressants to kind of top it all off, and you escape the hardness of knowing what is going on, and you escape into some type of sentimentality, and you justify all this nihilistic escape and all this hedonism and all this uselessness that you manifest by grabbing onto some type of emotional, moral thing. Oh, well, we should all be socialist, or we should all be egalitarian, or we should all be woke, or whatever the fuck it is that you use to justify it. Because you make up some nonsense ideology to cope with the fact that you're useless, you can't deal with life, and you can't deal with reality. And you turn around and call these people exploiting you evil, or something like this, instead of realizing that they're doing this because you're asleep. You're behaving like a sheep, and they fleece you like a sheep as a consequence. Islam and its ruthless moralism shoves back in your face an interesting challenge. Embrace reality at all costs. Get rid of every single vice that you have. Criticize your own culture. Realize that you're in a position of slavery, and that doesn't happen by an accident. That happens because your ancestors made mistakes. Your ancestors are not fucking angels, even though you try to treat them this way. They can fuck up too. Just because your ancestors drank alcohol doesn't mean it's going to be any help to you right now. In fact, it might be one of the significant obstacles that are stopping you being free from the tyranny that you live under. Just because your ancestors were Christian doesn't mean that it's the right path. I know it feels good to go back to tradition. Of course, there's a lot of life in Christianity, and Christianity connects you with evolutionary principles that are definitely going to serve you in your life. I understand it. I understand why people go back to Christianity. But that doesn't mean it's the solution. That doesn't mean it's the absolute has to be correct. There could be other ways. It could have enormous flaws that might even be getting in the way. It might not be significant enough, polarizing enough, intense enough to really escape the matrix of feminism. It might need something more severe. It might need a greater challenge that we can even comprehend. Again, here's some more Nietzsche quotes that reveal a very interesting perspective in all this. This comes from some of his notes. I'm not actually quite sure where. And I don't think they were published in his formal works, but, you know, he wrote them in the sidelines when he was maybe a bit drunk or something like that. He forgot to add them in. He says that what he does is he compares a variety of different religions: Hinduism, Islam, Old Testament Judaism, modern Christianity, and Buddhism. And he points out how they relate to the classes that produce them. And so, of course, the ruling class will always be affirming of life because they're in a situation of power. And part of life affirmation is realism. And the oppressed class will always be denying of life or negating of life. And their relationship will often be escapism. So he goes on to say, what an affirmative Aryan religion looks like, which is the product of the ruling class. He says the law book of Manu, or, of course, the foundations of Hinduism. He says this is the deification of the feeling of power in the Brahma. The deification of the feeling of power in God is the way we would understand that. He notes that it's interesting that this religion, this law book, arose among the warrior caste and was only later transferred to the priests, which is a good point. What does an affirmative Semitic religion look like? The product of a ruling class again. And he says the law book of Muhammad, or Islam. And of course, the older parts of the Old Testament, which a lot of people also point out that that's quite a contradiction between the New Testament and the Old Testament. People see that an awful lot. Why is the Old Testament so violent and brutal and savage, whereas the New Testament reads like a 1960s hippie book to some people? And of course, he goes on to say that Islam, or Muhammadis, and I can't pronounce that. He uses the word Muhammad, Muhammadanism, something like this. Obviously, I'm drunk, man. Look, I'm dressed like a piece of Guinness myself. You know, I'm black with the white top. I'm not the right guy to be reading your books, right? Islam, I'll just go with, is a religion for men. It is deeply contemptuous of the sentimentality and the mendaciousness of Christianity, which it feels to be a woman's religion. Again, that dichotomy between realism and escapism, between stoicism, manly virtue and discipline, soberness, and the emotionalism, escapism, sentimentality, romance, and hedonism of disempowered, effeminate, ineffective people. Nietzsche goes on to talk about the negative religions then. He says a negative Semitic religion, which is the product of an oppressed class. And this looks like the New Testament, which is Christianity. Now, this would be the, as famously is said, a religion that comes out of a people who are slaves, a slave morality, a slave religion, a people who are living in the circumstance of not being in power. Now, if you wanted actually a modern example of this, you would look at like conspiracy culture or something like this. Now, this is going to get a lot of people mad, but like the likes of Alex Jones, the experiences that we are oppressed, which might be true. I'm not trying to say it's not true. We have this elite that are exploiting us. And so instead of looking at the elite acting sober and rational with their own sober and rational goals that they're explaining clearly that they're trying to achieve, that makes logical, psychological sense if you actually try to understand that, that's difficult for an oppressed person to understand. So instead they manifest and project this image of evilness, of Satanism or something like this upon this conquering people, this people who are conquering them and ruling them. And this is the sort of orientation then, that there's just some type of cabal that's existed in this world since ancient Egypt or something like this, and they are all in touch with aliens and they're reptiles that are controlling us. And you see this manifest across many conspiracy theorists like David Icke and Alex Jones, and that's very fascinating. They can't be clear-headed about it. They can't talk like, all right, who are the specific people or what exactly is going on? That's an interesting thing in and of itself. And then what does a negative Aryan religion look like? And this would be a negative Aryan religion, but the difference here is that it manifested or grew out of the ruling caste of its people. And this would be Buddhism. So this is one that denies life, but it didn't come out of an oppressed class, a slave class. Instead, this religion came out of the master class. And that's where Buddhism came from. Buddha was from the warrior caste. And of course, that still wants to escape life into nirvana. But actually, you'll notice in Buddhism, there's way less sentimentality. It's way less romantic. It's way more sober. It's way more sterile and clear. There's something interesting about that manifesting. And then the last thing he points out is that it is quite in order that we possess no religion of oppressed Aryan races. He notes that none of us in Europe or in the West have a religion of the slave Aryans. Because that is a contradiction. A master race is either on top or it gets destroyed. Now that actually ties back into the genealogy of morals we were, I was talking about earlier, where when these helots would get conquered by the Spartans, they would have to deny the fact that the Spartans are better than them, which is why the Spartans won. And they would come up with all these lies that the Spartans are evil and the Spartans are Satanists or whatever they would say, instead of just acknowledging that the Spartans are better warriors. Because if they were to acknowledge that, that does something to your spirit, to be honest, where you would say, all right, you're the better warrior, cut my fucking head off, I'm going to fight to the very end because I'm not bowing down to somebody. I understand how the world works. To be real, to be true, to have that type of honest, sincere, and master spirit that wants reality and wants to confront reality at all costs, that almost drives you to death. You want to fight to the death for some reason. That's a very fascinating observation. Now, I really like this very challenging set of frameworks of thinking and set of perspectives because it's shoving back in our face an uncomfortable truth that us modern Europeans, us master races, us great traditional races, whatever you want to call us, we are acting like fucking slaves. We're acting like people who deserve what's coming to us, you know? We're acting like cucks and we're acting pathetic. We're allowing things like debt finance to exploit us. We're not doing anything about it. We don't have that severity like Islam has in order to stamp down our authority and stop this. We don't have the severity to acknowledge our intrinsic, egotistical male instincts, which is what sets the foundation for civilization. Islam is able to acknowledge something like that. Instead, we didn't have that inside of us. And so something like feminism rose up and it's put us in this awful fix, if you want to put it this way, that has put us in a bad situation. We have so many things that are not working out for us. And we're obviously in a position where we need to start thinking about new ideas. We need to start entertaining other perspectives because whatever we're doing right now is wrong. And the true instinct that we need in order to win is precisely that sober realism, that winner instinct. We need to be the UFC fighter who's able to acknowledge that we are losing because we're not good enough. We need to be able to have that humility to say, that guy was leg kicking us because we're not checking our leg kicks. That guy was catching us with the counter right hand because we were dropping our hand when we pulled it back to our face. And you're never going to win unless you're able to hit that and say, I'm actually not good enough. I actually don't know what, maybe I need a coach. Maybe I need a better coach. Maybe I need to listen to my fucking coach. Maybe I need to watch more videotapes. Maybe I need to practice more. Maybe I need to get more disciplined and get serious. Maybe I need to take things quite clearly and seriously. In fact, a very interesting archetype and man as an example of this is Conor McGregor himself. The avatar of, in some sense, Western degeneracy when he fought Khabib. You had in Khabib this stoic Muslim. Train Allah, train Allah, train Allah, train Allah, train Allah. Conor selling alcohol, selling whiskey, being loud and boisterous, making fun of Khabib and talking about all this stuff. And maybe Khabib could have been belligerent. I don't know the story behind it. But it was interesting that Conor was explaining that in the run-up to that fight, he was losing the run of himself a little bit. He was, you know, going and he would do sparring at like 1 a.m. He would beat the crap out of the guy he was sparring and then go in a drinking session for like 3 days and then come back in and do the same thing again. And this was his idea of preparing and practicing for this camp. And then when he went in and fought against Khabib, Khabib caught him with like probably the best punch he's ever been hit with. And it was such a shock how this was all getting exposed at this point, that there was an arrogance and egotism that was going to force humility upon Conor. And it's just so strange that the dichotomy that was set up there was that we had this alcohol shilling Western diva superstar like Conor, who's obviously a great man in his own right, coming up against the stoic, religious, sober Muslim. And reflecting the difference between the two ideologies and showing us and this is what you learn as a champion and as a fighter. It fucking sucks. It's really hard. But this is what you have to be able to do, is that Khabib was the better man of the night, clearly. Khabib trained properly in the camp running up to it. Conor did not. And that's a tragedy, because Conor definitely had the potential to beat him. But he didn't put in the practice in order to do this. Khabib did. Khabib had his head screwed on. Khabib had his intention pure. Conor had distractions. Conor had things pulling him other directions. He had vices that were weighing him down. If Conor had something in his culture that was conquering these vices, that was forcing these vices to be ostracized out, instead, we're not going to be some type of drunk slave race anymore. This is not what we are. We're going to be the people who secure the future. We're going to be the sober realists who win. We are not going to be the victims of some type of usurious financial class. Instead, we could look over at Islam and be like, why do they ban usury? Why is that such a big thing that an entire part of the world doesn't charge tax because they believe that it's a religious sin for the government to take money they hadn't earned? Why do they do that? Why are we paying 45% tax? I mean, the majority of it going to these national debts, and the majority of these national debts being a consequence of, you know, interesting financial institutions exploiting our government, especially generationally. Why are we born into debt slavery? Why are we going to these student loans? And why is stuff like this happening? Why is housing prices going up? Why are we paying things like property tax? What's going on here, guys? What's this all about? Why is this considered the standard? Why was the religious institutions of the past against this? Why did Catholicism ban this type of usury? Why is our hedonism and our drunkenness? Why is this culture permitted? Why are we soft with our family and friends where we permit these types of things? Oh, yeah, well, then, you know, I'll just go get drunk. That's what we do. That's what culture is, you know. Oh, the TV is sitting there promoting to you, get drunk. It's fun to be hedonistic. It's fun to party. It's fun to be loose and escapist. Go on, escape into the gay disco, whatever you want to do. Go play around. Than that. That's what the TV tells you to do. And then your family or Instagram, you know, brainwashes your friends and your family, and you all go and do this and you get pulled away. And then meanwhile, you sit around and you notice, wait a second, they're importing like entire military-aged fighting force into our nations while they exploit us with usury in order to pay for this. We are slaves. We are slaves that are encouraged to escape, because that's how we remain under control. That's how we remain as a part of the plantation. That's how we remain as livestock. And we can't escape this because we are not disciplined, because we won't face reality, because we're behaving like the helots. We're behaving like these pathetic wimps that get conquered. And if we wanted to overcome this, we would need to master ourselves. And it starts with confronting what is terrible and awful in us. It's very easy for us to turn around to Islam and say it's ignorant or it's foreign or they committed all these terrible things against us historically or something like this. It's easy for us to bitch about all sorts of people. Perhaps it's even easy for us to bitch about the elites. But we are the ones who line up like sheep and go and buy alcohol and get smashed all the time. We are the ones who waste ourselves. We are the ones who have the weak culture in many aspects. We're the ones that are falling apart. We're the ones that have let hedonism and all these things take over us. And so this is the hard, ugly reality that needs to be shined in our face. And the real question, probably the most Nietzschean question of all, is that if we are to see ourselves on the ascent once again, we will need to find the strength to be able to face that ugly picture and overcome it. We can't be like these people that you see nowadays who try to romanticize what they see in the mirror. Oh, us Europeans, we're so mighty. We're the master race. We're the supreme conquerors. We're the badasses. Yeah. Our history is so great. Yeah, sure it is. There's lots of magnificent things in our history, but our reality is not that great. Right now, things are not as an ideal. We're not all walking around knights in shining armor. We're not big bad. We're not Achilles. None of us really are living like Achilles when you think about it. A lot of us are just dork intellectuals, little racist like librarians or something like this. It's nothing too impressive. In fact, when we shine the hard picture on our faces, we see something quite decrepit and ugly. We're the last men. And our imperative is in order to embrace that reality and actually put in the hard, hard sacrifices to make sure that that's not the destiny that we have in the future. And I don't think most people are able for this. I think it's too hard. I think most people want the escapism and the slavery. Most guys might wake up to the situation and they'll just escape into Lord of the Rings or some romantic fantasy about the past or the knights in shining armor of medieval times. They'll escape because escapism is always what the slave does, always what the spiritual slave does. Who can be real? Who can be hard? Who can be clear? That's the challenge that sits on our lap.